Welcome again to the GearYaGirl.com official podcast. I've got a very special guest today. This is Annie Vo. She's in the New York area. She's a personal trainer. She's a highly experienced RKC and PCC instructor, and I'm really looking forward to talking to her. We've become friends over the past few years. I'm going to put a link below to her interview on Dragon Door. Now, some of that information has changed, but you'll get the basic idea about who Annie really is. So Annie, thanks again for joining the show. And you just got back from England at the PCC in London. How was that?
Well, let me first say thank you for having me on again. We always have a blast.
Yes.
So I was certainly looking forward to this opportunity. And London, yes, we just got back from the London Progressive Calisthenics Certification. That's the long acronym spelled out for PCC.
Yes.
in our smaller circles, you can just throw these acronyms around and most people know, but
right.
More of the world is not part of the working out world or fitness culture and trying to get in, and they don't know what that means.
So true.
It stands for Progressive Calisthenics Certification. So we had a blast. We were at this gym named the Commando Temple. And mm-hmm. I don't know if we had talked about it before, but I will publicly announce that it is my favorite gym in the world that
wow.
I've ever been to.
Okay, that's
huge. That I've
ever
stepped foot into. It was like a museum for anything physical culture related from the past
wow.
till now. I mean, there was like the old strongman dumbbells, you know, those ones that look like a oversized tongue ring.
Yes.
Like two big balls and then a really thick cylindrical center. There were anvils, all different kinds of grip elements and implements and, I mean, hammer. I mean, any sort of thing that you could possibly think of in the realm of exercise science.
Wow.
You know, that you could think of from the circus until now. This gym had it. Plus, it had all these posters and pictures and little quotes and snippets from hero action movies, comic books, any type of strong character, real or unreal or alive or dead.
That's amazing.
Plastered all over the place. So it was highly motivational, highly inspirational, and then it had all these cool things. I mean, I was trying to explain this to a friend. I said, you know, when you first, or at least when I first became a trainer, I'd go online and you hear about certain exercise things like, oh, there's a gripper, you follow the gripper, the gripper's related to this pulling thing and cement balls and what is that? And you go on this internet search that takes 3-5 hours and you're just tickled every step of the way. Mm. The owner of this gym did that and bought everything that he found along that journey.
That's fantastic. Oh yeah, I've got to check that out. That just sounds, well, the pictures were so cool. I'm going to try to grab some, and if you're listening to this on YouTube, I will have already grabbed those pictures and you're probably looking at them right now. But just I loved what I saw in terms of just the variety.
Very cool. And our hosts were gracious and helpful. I mean, and that's just the starting point. That's not even talking about the event itself.
Right?
So then the event, we had, I believe, 25 people that
nice.
Had come all over Europe. And they came and they just had this great attitude. They'd been following all of us. They really came to share something. There were some pretty moving stories of individuals that come from towns where nobody else does calisthenics. You know, these people online seem like fictitious people. And here they are in a room full of people that have been doing muscle ups and push ups and things that their neighbors are making fun of them for.
I generally find that that's been the case at a lot of these PCCs, even the very,
mm-hmm.
well, actually the very first one that we did up in St. Paul, Minnesota. And that was a huge one. That was incredibly just giant because it was the first one ever. But people came in and like you were saying, they were the one person from their town that was doing this, or, you know, they were the one guy in the gym who was, you know, training others using calisthenics and everybody else being on the machines. There was just almost like these areas had sent over their representative of, you know, their one calisthenics you know, guy or gal. And it was mm-hmm. really, it was so fun to see them all get together. Even people who, you know, otherwise wouldn't have had much in common. You know, I'll never forget, you know, the B-boys were right next to mm-hmm. The federal officer and, you know, and they were all talking about push-ups. Like, what am I witnessing?
That's right. It was really, I mean, it's always moving. And of course, in every town, at every workshop, there's so many different people with different mm-hmm. backgrounds, different experiences. We had a woman that I don't want to mess this up, but I believe that she was a kind of high-level circus performer who'd mm-hmm. Been classically trained in China.
Wow.
You know, so she has a very unique background with calisthenics. You've got someone like her, and then you have this other gentleman who was like the third fastest runner in the UK, holds world titles in sprinting. I mean, there's so many different fitness backgrounds that came together. And then there was other people, mm-hmm. like myself included, that didn't come into fitness until later in life and said, hey, this has transformed my life. And now I'm part of something that I never thought I'd be part of. And I'm doing, you know, they're in the same group mm-hmm. with these other great athletes that have had different experiences.
It is so amazing, too. And I think the coolest thing about calisthenics is how many, you know, different fields of, you know, fitness, but also of other things that it crosses over. And then just how applicable it is to just about everyone, everywhere. I was on YouTube and I happened upon this, it was like a tutorial about muscle ups. And I was looking in the background. I'm like, the background of this video looks really familiar. Where's this guy from? Turns out he was from a town that I had spent many years in as a kid.
Oh.
And I looked at him like, no way. I mean, this video had over 1 million views on it. This guy has just loads.
Whoa.
And yeah, loads of followers on YouTube. I mean, he's a rock star on YouTube. And here he is right down the highway where I grew up. And, you know, just just working the bar, like unbelievable. And I was like, whoa.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's like there's so much out there. He taught this like tiny little boy how to do these, you know, muscle ups where, you know, you come up to the top and then you spin around and catch the bar again. It's like, whoa. It was amazing. I was like, oh my gosh. Hey, teach me.
I mean, you know, I love kettlebells. Mm-hmm. And that was really kind of my entry point into physical culture.
Right.
Overall. And then it would be easy. It's easy to say. I mean, the kettlebell is pretty simple. So you have your one kettlebell or two kettlebells.
Right.
And then you can absolutely do a well-rounded workout that's challenging at any level. I mean, you don't need, you know, all these different bells.
Right.
So calisthenics takes it one step further where, you know, as Al and Danny say, all you need is the ground beneath you. And if you don't have that, then something else is a problem. I think it's important to note because, you know, the vibe at these events is so positive and so encouraging. And not to say that they aren't at our kettlebells workshops, but because, you know, kettlebells is a tool outside of your body. So mm-hmm. you need instruction on how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like an experience outside of your body
right.
that eventually becomes inside your body once you have honed those techniques.
Right.
You know, it's still kind of external. With calisthenics, it's your body. You've been working with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come to these workshops, it's ways to improve your efforts with your body. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
It's not like some other third party thing that you need to learn how to do.
Right.
I mean, so I kind of liken it to we're all musicians, but the calisthenics folks are singers. And then the kettlebells folks are string players or you know, mm-hmm. wind instrument players.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all musicians. We all have different challenges.
Mm-hmm.
It's but because it's already your body that you've been working with,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't breed the same kind of feel of competition or who's mm-hmm. better or what's a better way to, you know, this kind of value system is left behind. It's more about how you can improve your technique.
And there's not a number on anything. It's not like, okay, this is 24 kilos. This is, you know, 32
right.
kilos. There's no, there's not as much
correct.
Of a one-to-one. What am I looking for?
Yeah. You know understand what I'm saying, but there's, again, it's kind of just the, learning an external thing and then applying that to you, it's in calisthenics, you know about you and you're trying to apply some external things to that.
Yeah, totally. Well, and the other thing is, I mean, quite simply, your arm isn't going to fly off and hit your neighbor in the head either. So, you know, there's a couple, maybe fewer safety rules, maybe with, you know, the human body. I mean, you can still really mess yourself up with just body weight, you know, but it's definitely harder. You've got to try a little bit harder. You're not going to drop something on your foot if there's nothing to drop on your foot.
Right.
Oh, man.
That's right.
Now, you know, you and I both love so many different modalities and, you know, because I kind of came into this really getting interested in kettlebells as well. I had originally seen Lauren Brooks had a series of still photos, like this was forever ago, online. And I was like, okay, I'm intrigued. I was tired of going to the gym and, it, you know, it stalled out with basically a bodybuilding routine from the 90s that someone had designed for me. And, you know, those things were like everything, it works to a point. And I had reached that point. And, you know, I was like, man, well, what else can I do? And, you know, the kettlebell, even when I didn't know really what I was doing, it kicked my butt. And fortunately, you know, I did find eventually an RKC trainer to train with locally. And we're still friends, which is awesome. Good old Tim Schumann.
Awesome.
And
yeah.
So, you know, learning the right way to use the kettlebell was just instrumental. And then once I had that awareness, you know, going to the, you know, I always did pull-ups, but now I do them better. And now I do a whole lot more of them. I used to think I was really, you know, hot stuff for being able to do five or six of them. And now it's like, okay, I can do twice that. And then I can come back and do more. It's not like I'm spent for the day. So, you know, you are a person of multiple modalities. You know, what are all the different systems and implements that you use?
I mean, I'll keep it very simple. I mean, most of the time I stay pretty much between calisthenics, kettlebells, and barbells.
Okay.
And that's not to say that I don't occasionally get on a chest press machine or, you know, what have you, depending on what exercise stuff is available at what hotel or, you know, sometimes you just want to try it.
Yeah.
You know, I hopped on the leg press the other day for the first time in 10 years. I just forgot how to use the thing. And I was like, well, let me just see if I still know how to use it. And you know what? I still did. And it was great. But so I'm not going to add the leg press. But barbells, kettlebells, calisthenics, some of the modalities that I have or that I draw from, it started with RKC. So there was a bunch of, I mean, we got Dan John, even like Franz Steinman, and, and I'm trying to think of even Cortez. I mean, there's so many influential RKCs that helped me improve my technique at that time, and reading their blogs and getting a lot of their ideas on how to structure their workouts and what one should be emphasizing when they're working out. You know, you've got kind of two major schools of thought, which is technique first or just do anything, please. Just do something. And that's going to, you know, consistency is going to outweigh anything. And then you've got the crossovers, which is like, yes, please get your technique in order. And even if you don't break any world records, as long as you're consistent about picking something up or doing something.
Right.
So I've got that under, that's kind of like the foundation. And then I was lucky to work with Steve Maxwell for a few years, the Jim Jones people in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of these people really had different, distinct perspectives on fitness. I would liken Jim Jones to be more for general, they call it general physical preparedness. And I think I'll come back around to that. Then you've got someone like Steve Maxwell who is living it and been living it. And he's been a trainer for decades and really been his own only consistent lab specimen over the years.
Interesting.
So he has really, really interesting insight as to what kind of stays the course over time and what he sees in groups. So you have what you do as an athlete, like what kind of exercises are useful, this and that, but then there's the teaching component. So I feel like I learned a lot from Steve about teaching people and what to look for and, you know, faults and fixes and really the personal side of being a personal trainer.
That makes me think of something interesting. Like, okay, you and I and most of the people that we know and hang out with, we're really into this stuff. We love it. We live, eat, sleep, and breathe it. And to us, it's super, super fun. But to, you know, some of our clients, you know, this is something that, you know, they're just starting out with. It's not their their passion necessarily. And so there's really, you know, kind of a mental thing that has to happen with us to kind of bring it, you know, kind of where they're at. You know, this is something they've maybe compartmentalized instead of, you know, making the transition to this is part of my overall lifestyle. And that's interesting you mentioned that.
But I was fortunate. I mean, again, I was never athletic. I was in the marching band. I played music. I think you know this funny story where I actively participated in marching band to get out of PE. They said, hey, do you want to just, you know, do this exercise class? You don't have to join a team. And I said, I would rather do anything else but that. And I said, well, you can do marching band, but you don't play any marching band instruments. So I went out and learned how to play an instrument that could be played in the marching band to avoid athletic sports. So, I mean, when I became a trainer, I was developing my own personal fitness and really getting into it and really wanting to be someone that people respected or believed in. But it happened to happen simultaneously with the development of my clients' own personal fitness because I really didn't have a starting point either. So I feel as a professional, I don't feel as distanced from my clients that I feel like some trainers are. Yeah. I meet plenty of seasoned trainers that have a really difficult time relating to their clients. And, you know, even this idea that, yes, I love fitness and they don't. You know, I kind of get where they're coming from. I mean, if you've spent your life devoted to other things and other passions, and you're trying to discover something new, it's not necessarily going to be your favorite thing. It's not because you're lazy. It's not because you're this and that. Do you remember the show that came out last year? It was a reality show where these personal trainers gained, you know, 60 to 100 pounds or something actively. They said, hey, I'm just going to eat junk food for a period of time, and then I'm going to work it off at the same time that my clients work it off. And then this is going to imbue me with this special understanding of my clients. No, I think it's a curious concept. It's a curious premise because that's making the assumption, or at least the way that I interpreted it, was that most clients of personal training think that their trainer does not understand them. And in order for their trainer to understand them, they would have to gain a bunch of weight and lose it. That's the only way. You'd have to, something horrible. It wasn't even like you get an injury. You know, if we're just saying we're trying to liken our experience to our clients, why couldn't one trainer get into a car accident that was debilitating? Why couldn't one trainer have a baby? Why couldn't, you know, these are things that also tremendously affect one's body. But instead, they're like, okay, we're just going to gain all this weight and then we're going to lose it together. So I think it says two things. Number one, that most clients don't think their trainers understand them. And part two, there is kind of a negative bias on both sides towards overweight people.
Yeah.
And it's like the big pink elephant in the room. There's plenty of reasons why people enjoy fitness. I can't think of one single person that says that they don't want to lose weight. There's trainers that want to lose weight all the time. There's your neighbor. There's your mother. I mean, people say it casually. People say it seriously. So I think there's a big kind of negative perception of being overweight. So here you go, trainer. You're going to gain weight and lose it. And this is going to make you a decent human being because your whole life has been perfect. I thought it was a very, very interesting premise.
That is interesting.
But anyways, going back to, I guess, my experience with this, I was seeking all kinds of different mentors because me as the person, Annie Vo, the individual who is just trying to improve their fitness, and then I have Annie Vo, the personal trainer, who wants to be a professional in my field, something that I'm passionate about. So I always felt the need to seek out more. And from all the disciplines, I mean, I practice yoga. I do Krav Maga, I do Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, I really try to immerse myself in as many different things as possible. Or every time I go on vacation, I make it a point to try a class at a place that I've never been or take a lesson somewhere because there's always something that can be learned from another set of eyes, whether it's within your discipline or not within your discipline.
Well, totally. And, you know, like basic human movements across, you know, barbell and kettlebell and calisthenics, you know, the basics are the basics. Like, you know, the hip hinge mm-hmm. is the hip hinge, regardless if you're, you know, toting a weight around or not. That never changes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these just
that's right.
caveman basics are going to be the straight across the line. And, you know, a lot yeah. of times, you crack me up with the band thing. I'd forgotten about that. I was in band as well. And yeah. I hated the idea of PE so much that I would actually, you know, I would take more academic classes and then try to get that over with at summer school. I took driver's ed unnecessarily because that gave me one of the PE credits. If you went back to high school and told some of those coaches what I do now, they'd be like, oh, you're making a funny joke, you know. What? So I was cracked me up when I'd show up to, you know, some of these early, one of my first certifications or so for RKC, and they're like, so what sports did you play in high school? I'm like, well, I was on chess team until I got a car. does that count? And they're looking at me like, what'd you play in college? I ran the computer lab often until 3 a.m. By choice. I ran around pranking people sometimes. There were some short sprints and hiding under things involved, but I didn't really start working out at all until you know, I was coming home for the summers, and I was working at a very large commercial bakery plant. And the QA lab would bring up a dozen cookies about every other day, and they were hot and delicious. And I put on some weight and said, you know what? I need to do something about this. Now, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough for me to notice, and that was good enough. Yeah, and that wouldn't be enough for me to be on television. I don't claim to understand American television and its weird, strange, deranged motivations. Like, oh, goodness.
Yeah, seriously.
And I'm not sure that stuff helps anybody on there, but anyway. Now, okay, so you were talking about Commando Temple, and I loved what I saw in the pictures. Something that I love and am not involved with on any organized level at all is odd object lifting and mm-hmm. unconventional training. And I just got this super cool short mace from Ryan Pitts of Stronger Grip. And I find that that kind of training goes really well with the calisthenics and the kettlebells too. It's like, it's this little missing puzzle piece, and it's super fun and makes you look like you're some kind of medieval warrior. So of course that's a big plus point.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried
that's
mace?
That's number one.
Yes.
I have.
I thought so.
I mean, as a, you know, we're kind of fleshing this out, it really does make sense. So going back to why is it that I stay with kettlebells, barbells, and calisthenics?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, it's the foundational things. I mean, we rarely do anything in a perfect squat position, but I'm constantly working it mm-hmm. and honing it because I feel like I'm lacking a lot of those basic movement years, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this talk about 10,000 hours before you become an expert and things like that.
Right.
And there's hundreds of studies that kind of delve into more deeply how one becomes very good at doing something mm-hmm. and the nature of how synapses fire and wire together and create habits over time.
Mm-hmm.
So since I did not have a sports background, since I want to be a highly regarded professional in my field,
mm-hmm.
and since I'm just a human being who's at where I'm at, my best allocation of time and resources is towards those foundational movements
mm-hmm.
because I didn't have them. So yes, I would love to do more kind of odd lifting items, and I think they are great.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's based on where you are on the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
For someone, and I'll even include myself, to switch over to just odd lifting
mm-hmm.
Items at this stage, it would be for the purpose of competing in odd lifting items, which is a worthy
mm-hmm.
pursuit.
Yeah.
But if I'm not going to be doing it regularly, or, you know, I'm confident that I would be more kind of well served by doing the basics,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm kind of at a deficit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind of.
But depending on where you are in this continuum,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have certainly some advanced operators
mm-hmm.
that don't need to spend that much time on this basic stuff because, it really comes second nature to them. Mm-hmm. And so they can do all these other modalities really well, and it doesn't kind of affect their basic functionality and, you know, strength and those sorts of things. But I think that a certain level of strength and flexibility and all those things have to be earned mm-hmm. before you branch out.
There is that. And I do agree with that. On the other side of things, these can almost be really, like, for where I'm at right now, if I, you know, something with my movement is not up to par, you know, I go to pick up something, mm-hmm. I know immediately, I'm like, hey, this isn't moving, even though I should be, you know, be doing a basic right. squat or whatever. And it will really kind of point that out. And the other thing is, sure. you know, just logistics. I'm down mm-hmm. here in Florida. I've got a giant storage area. I've got a car with a giant trunk. You could put like four golf bags in that thing. Down in Florida, I think it's easier for us to have access to a lot of these things. You certainly sure. wouldn't, you know, jump in a cab with half of the stuff that's in my car at this moment. Ruining.
Yeah, without a
doubt. You know, so there's that accessibility. Yeah,
exactly. The accessibility and all those things right, do come into play as well. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and like,
but I would love to do that. That would be great.
Yeah. Oh gosh, one of the things that I feel like one of those kids that you give them a gift and they play with the box more than the item inside.
Totally.
Ryan, I got one of those half tires from Ryan, and I've already thought of 10,000 stupid things that I can do with it besides hit it with a hammer. It's a nice low seat for working on my end table with my laptop. It's a great odd object thing. Flip it upside down, put a sandbag or a couple of kettlebells in it, take a walk. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we can do squats with it in that
That's
way.
That's a good one.
Can hop over it. You can do step ups. You can do box jumps mm-hmm. on it. You can jump over it. You know, there's all these things. And a lot of times I don't really work in a gym mm-hmm. and I'll end up over, you know, at a park or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, what do we have here that we can use? All right. I've got my kettlebells with me. We've got a pull-up bar here and ooh, look at that big stump. Let's go pick it up too. All right. Pick that up and carry it 50 feet that way and then bring it back, you know, within the circuit.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I love to do that kind of thing. But I think down here, it's easier to be able to do that. You know, I don't know. It's fun.
But then also, too, there's another kind of separate thing. Okay, so if you have a specific goal, if you're competing mm-hmm. in a certain sport or something,
right,
that may or may not play into it.
Part two,
again, if you don't have the requisite kind of strength to be doing these odd lifts, because they're much harder than when the lift is symmetrical, you have all this time to set up and do mm-hmm. all this stuff. There's a lot of externalities. You know, I have a lot of, and I'm sure you have this too, where clients are saying, hey, I really don't want to do this squat because my knees are going to get messed up. Mm-hmm. But I do play tennis over the summers, once every couple of weeks.
Ouch.
And you're going, tennis is an explosive, dynamic, all sports just categorically are generally dynamic, unpredictable, explosive, requiring of a lot of spine twisting, you know, what have you. And I'm like, okay, so you don't want to do this thing that you have enough time to prepare yourself on an even surface slowly. You'd rather go out here and have, you know, be in a situation that's much more challenging. This is kind of what I think of when I think of, you know, carrying rocks and things like that. Like, you need to earn kind of a basic ability to move your body and certain strengths, because it is going to be more challenging than you've got, than instead of having two symmetrical, perfect handles.
Right.
Directly where you need them to be. So that's part of it. And then also, how much volume are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So I think for some folks, I mean, going back to my concept of building up my own foundation,
right?
I need to make up those reps. So to make up those reps, I personally want to do them as safely as possible.
Right.
So I'm generally going to use movements that I can do safely,
right,
at higher volumes. Understanding that as I fatigue, I'm just not going to be as sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it too. I think for some folks, and I really believe in this, you know, going back to the music model,
mm-hmm.
every musician plays their scales as a warm-up. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, in the Electroharmonic or in Van Halen or 5 years old and taking your third guitar lesson.
Right.
Everybody plays scales. So because you need that volume, you need that comfort of experience. And that's the way that you do it, through volume. So do you want to do that with the most difficult things that you can do? Maybe in the future, but if it's very difficult for you now, it's going to be very challenging to get volume in those realms.
Right.
So where can you develop volume rather easily in the lifts that you can do well, or they're relatively safe?
Right. Well, that's always important too. And I'm glad you brought up volume in general. And I don't know if this is a misperception on my part or not, but for some reason, I get the idea that you do a lot of volume in your training, both within a session and then with also the number of sessions you have, you know, per week. I don't know if that's correct or not. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, it's all relative, my dear. I don't know what you mean by a lot.
Okay. Well, you know, because like I've read some of the Jim Jones stuff, and I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Wait, you want me to do that all in one day? You know, lately I've upped my own volume in terms of both things done within a workout, weight done within a workout, and then also number of sessions a week. I've brought up a little bit, but I've also gotten better about recovery. And I feel like that balance for where I'm at right now is getting into a pretty good zone. But then I go and I read like one of these Jim Jones things, and I'm like, holy moly, how are you managing, you know, that level of, you know, that just that extreme number of reps, very sizable weights, and then also frequency, you know, any recovery tips or strategies you can share with us?
Well, I mean, the way that I understand it, and again, I've attended their seminars and consider myself close to the community and have really personally transformed as a person from these experiences, which I will forever be indebted to them for, in terms of the volume. Mm-hmm. So there's two kind of parts of this volume, and it's the one point is that what I spoke of before, which is the idea that you need to have a lot of practice under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
So in a, you know, a general warm-up might include 50 to 70 squats at very lightweight or body weight, focusing on technique only, and that's prior to the workout.
Mm-hmm.
And for some folks starting out, maybe that's the end of the workout.
Right.
Right there, because you're just not accustomed to that volume. But as time progresses and you're adding more to the slate, you know, it's not like these workouts go on for hours. They really don't.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, 60, 90 minutes. I mean, it's really not any longer than any other workout. But the intention is to use kind of the volume to get yourself. And if you look at some of the programs too, the movements that are being used are pretty simple. They're squats, push-ups, things. Even if they're loaded, they're relatively safe things, not a lot of high skill things, because part of it is you want to get the volume up. And part two is you want to get to the point where you ask yourself whether you are quitting or want to quit rather because you physically can't go forward or because you're choosing not to.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's a point in every part of the workout, and it's really designed for that purpose. I mean, again, I'm not going to say that I know exactly what they're talking about, but the way that I interpret it is the biggest changes occur when you have to really confront yourself.
Hmm.
So we have, you know, a perfect example is I'll use their 100 squat challenge. Okay. So this was showcased in their, it was human to superhuman training series, because Mark Twight had trained Henry Cavill for the Superman role.
Oh, wow.
And people are saying, oh, is he CGI? And he's like, no, that's how he looks with his shirt off because we did these things. So they're of the belief that once you really come to grips with that choice, then you will either choose to continue because now you're owning it and it's uncomfortable or it's boring or it's painful as hell, but you're like, you know what? I can do another rep and I'm going to do it. Or you push yourself to the point where you're like, you know what? I'm stopping. Like, I physically can't do it.
Right.
Wow. Now I've actually learned where this point is. And since it's being done with a relatively safe and simple movement, you don't get injured mm-hmm. by learning that lesson.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, although yeah, you might feel emotionally drained by that. So we have this 100 squat challenge, okay? So you get, I think for gentlemen, it's 135 pounds on the bar, mm-hmm. barbell, back squat position. For ladies, it's 95 pounds, I believe, or 105. I mean, they scale a little bit based on your body weight.
Okay.
But let's say roughly 95 to 110 for ladies. Gentlemen, it's 135 to 150.
Okay.
You have to keep the bar on your back, and you have to complete 100 squats. You can rest as much as you want, mm-hmm. but you can't put the bar down.
Okay.
If you put the bar down, then you have to do 20 burpee pull-ups and then come back and finish your reps.
I think I would not put that bar down.
But believe me, you start asking yourself whether you physically can't do one more rep or mm-hmm. because you're choosing to take the 20 burpee pull-up interlude.
That's interesting. You know, it reminds me like a lot of the RKC snatch test, starting, you know, early on, mm-hmm. that used to be a real just scary thing for me. And I remember when they used to say, oh, you can put it down. I'm like, you don't understand. If I put that thing down, I'm not going to pick it back up. Okay. It's like,
right.
Well, we just got to eyes on the prize. Got to keep going. Now it's not right. a big deal for me to do it anymore. I did it as a warm up the other day and I
sure. you know,
barely even got short of breath and was super proud of that. And then I got freaked out
exactly.
that maybe I didn't count right, but no, I did. I was like,
no,
this is yes, we've
that.
Made progress, you know? But it was, it's the same kind of thing. Cause I remember, you know, training for that early on and it was like, I really want to put this down, but I've got 10 mm-hmm. more. It's like, oh, come on, you know,
yeah.
I can stand
but that's
it.
Where the big change is, and I think you can attest to this, and I can as well, with the snatch test. I think anybody who's undergone the snatch test, mm-hmm. trained for it, passed it, were borderline cases. I mean, there's some folks that we've encountered, of course, they were well beyond that, so the snatch test was not really a big deal. And we've got people on the other side that couldn't snatch at all.
Right.
And try, you know, so there's been all on the continuum, but I think for most people, it's kind of it's a crucible. It's a coming of age. It's
mm-hmm.
something that transitions you because you're having to ask yourself,
mm-hmm.
can I do this? Or will I not do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or am I choosing not to do this for other reasons?
Right.
Am I willing to go beyond the unknown to see if it's possible?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no,
and,
no.
You know, that would be a travesty because
yeah.
I've been right about everything else in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's part of it. And then I think I agree intellectually and emotionally, that's where the changes really happen. When you prove yourself wrong,
mm-hmm.
or when you prove yourself right, or any time that you start having these questions, and it doesn't even have to be self-doubt, it's just questions in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is this possible? Do I want to do this? Why am I doing this? What is the point of all this? You know, anything that gets you to have a conversation with yourself. I think that's where the changes get made. And I think with these kind of high volumatic workouts, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, sometimes this is heavy weights. And like you say, sometimes it's not with heavy weights. Volume can be produced at any intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to recovery practices, you know, I kind of, and this is kind of around our circle in terms of describing how things work. It's like managing your bank account or a credit card. Let's use a credit card, okay?
Right.
You just have a certain amount of money you can spend. You don't have a credit line. So let's say when you're first working out, you've got a Capital One credit card with $300 on it.
Okay.
The amount of things that you can buy, kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
But $300 is kind of easy to put back on the card.
Right.
So you do that a couple times. You buy a couple of t-shirts, you pay it back,
mm-hmm.
takes a couple of weeks, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So Capital One says, hey, we're bumping you up to $1,000.
Nice.
So guess what? You can buy more things, but it takes you a little bit longer to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how we treat the physical culture. So let's say you do this huge expenditure on mm-hmm. whatever, Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I have to put things back in the tank. So maybe mm-hmm. it is more reps of similar things at a lighter weight and working on technique or doing mobility or doing like an easy jog or a bike or a walk or anything to flush the muscles out. But then guess what? I need to go to bed earlier.
Right.
I need to eat better food. Mm-hmm. I need to not argue with my spouse, you know, things like that. So everything that goes into your spending is everything that goes into your recovery. So it's not just exercise. Just like if you're going to throw down, you're maxing out on Monday, it's emotionally draining. You're not going to go home and be the best wife or husband or, you know, whoever that night.
Right.
You're going to be rocked. There's a cost to that.
Yeah, totally. So
if, you know, you're going to be listening to your spouse, you're going to be making the meals, you're going to be doing whatever, you know, so the idea of recovery comes from a lot of different angles. Maybe you have to go to the museum. Maybe you need to read a book on philosophy. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes for you to mentally and physically replenish yourself so that you can make that next big purchase.
Right. Well, that's a great metaphor for it.
Yeah, like for the credit card, you either pay it because you're putting more money on the thing or you just stop buying expensive crap.
Right.
There's a couple ways to save money on the card.
Right. Oh, that's cool. Huh.
You know, or in the realm of professional athletes. Mm-hmm. Why is it that they have a season? They play 18 games over the course of 4 months, but they need to take the rest of the 8 months off.
Right.
Just getting chiropractic and going to the beach. They've mm-hmm. got an Amex Black.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They just spend $500,000. Well, guess what? A lot of time to bring it back.
Right.
So it's not that they're doing it all year round. And I think that's why sometimes just looking at the numbers, the volume can be a little deceiving because mm-hmm. you may not know or may not be explain at what intensity these things are being done. And of course, on the World Wide Web, we all want to look great. So no one wants to say, hey, today mm-hmm. I cried on the foam roller for 90 minutes and then talked to my mom and I felt a lot better.
Well, you're also talking to someone who occasionally does like to put obnoxious, weird fails online. So there is that. I like to keep it real.
Yeah. But you know what I mean. And the greater realm of things, you know, that's kind of a strange world where we're trying to reveal aspects of our life. But we also, of course, have some pride and self-interest in trying to make it look cool, right? Or somewhat cool. Or we're trying to shape something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm trying to shape. I'm trying to do it like you, trying to keep it real.
Well, yeah, definitely. And you know what? If you aren't already following Annie on Instagram, is it just VoFactor? What is your username on there?
It's at VoFactor.
Cool. I got it right. Because I saw something that you had done on there recently. So what are you working on now? What's your next big thing?
Well, my next big thing is just kind of being more revealing of these concepts, because I think what I really, really enjoy is working with people one-on-one and getting to know them and their individual stories. I mean, you know, my background is in philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and I spent so much time in my head and reading about theories of mind and how do we know facts are facts and things of that nature. And I really feel like it's directly applicable to the job that I do now. Each person is a complex matrix of memories, mm-hmm. sensory inputs, outputs, perceived inputs and outputs. And then as their trainer, I mean, you have to take all those things into account. You're trying to listen, mm-hmm. make sure that you don't put your own biases on this person.
Right.
And then come up with a solution. The solution can be, it just can be so many different things
right.
that may be fitness or non-fitness related. But I like the fact that it encompasses all the aspects of the human being in order to make these changes real.
Well, because when we're talking, you know, about behavior change, it really is so much more than just working out. It's so much more than food. A lot of times, you know, even if we're not really there to, you know, make the mental change, you know, it's something that people have to do themselves. And, you know, there's just so much interesting stuff involved with that. It's like,
I think Socrates was the one who said that people will do what they think is logical.
Huh.
Nobody does anything that they think is illogical. However, one can be misinformed about the logic that they are following.
Right.
People will do things that they want to do, or at least the way they interpret it, people will do things they want to do. So our job is to make this one of those things that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you position it from a place of, for some people, logic works. For mm-hmm. some people, emotions work. For some people, science works. For some people, other things work. For some people, they feel good in their body. That works. Your job is to identify by what input
mm-hmm.
you can start to guide that effort so that they will now be doing the things that they want to do. It just happens to be working out.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And I always love getting caught up with you and seeing what you're up.
It is my pleasure.
you know, in addition to Instagram, Annie's also on Facebook, and then she is doing plenty of personal training in the Manhattan area. So if you are in that area, definitely get in touch with her, and you can see how much knowledge and experience and mindfulness that she's bringing to your training. So you're in good hands.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. This is fantastic.
You're welcome.